And like you said, so many people using Pokemon characters in emotes. Yeah,
especially with Nintendo, I would not be surprised if they start cracking down on your little Charmander emote. Better get that out quick, because they're going to sue you for $1 billion pretty soon.
Welcome back to the Gaming Careers Podcast. We are in February now, so we have completed 1 month of the year, and we haven't missed an episode yet, so I guess that's a mini round of applause for me and Ben. Finding it actually pretty easy, but there's been loads of news this week. January is kind of slow, and we had to sort of expand on some topics a little bit more, but we've got so many different points to discuss this week, Ben. First of all, how are you doing? Have you had a good week?
Yeah, man. Thanks for asking. I'm doing well. We both talked about playing a lot of League lately, at least I am, so that's been fun. But yeah, it's been a good week. There has been a ton of news to come out, I think, especially over, I think the big thing recently is the stuff around the Stonks situation, which I'm sure you've seen. I think we can start with.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry to butt in there, but like it's been something that my normal friends have been talking about, which is very rare that they cross into the world of live streaming. But of course, with the world of how it is nowadays, there's going to be people in the right place that have been talking about this on streams for a while. And then it blows up, like the stock situation has with GameStop and all that. And I, in particular, saw one streamer, the stock guy, who I imagine has been streaming about stocks and his investment advice for a while. Of course, this news then becomes mainstream, and all of a sudden he's getting 30,000, 50,000. I even saw concurrent viewers on his stream talking about stocks and what's happening with the GameStop and Robinhood and all this that's been in the news this week. I guess for people that haven't seen any of this, could you do a quick rundown of exactly what's been happening if you've been following the situation?
Yeah, I can try. I mean, I'm sure most people at this point have seen what's going on with stocks or just the general buzz around stocks. Short story is basically the Reddit figured out how to make a lot of money off of GameStop and at the hedge fund's expense. So there's been a lot of internet hype around it and a lot of sort of like us versus them on the internet, I think, with like Reddit and Twitter and Twitch all against like these big Wall Street guys. So much so that I think it's caught over not just in the US, but over in Canada and overseas. And so it's a pretty big moment. I think probably the biggest moment of January so far. And it's just kind of interesting to see how it transcends into the Twitch scene as well. I've seen a lot of streamers who are buying into the GameStop stuff who either talk about like, hold guys, hold, like I'm with you guys there. Or like in this case with the stock guy, again, he's probably been streaming stock stuff for a long time. I don't know. I hadn't watched him before. But now, of course, he's just kind of at the right place, right time. And he has blown up over the past week or two with, 30, 40, 50,000 people watching him. Because he'll stream during the stock market hours and then basically just follow how the stock does, all stocks, but especially GameStop, over the course of the day. So really interesting to watch. And I think it's just more ways that we're seeing non-gaming content kind of break out on Twitch. So I think it's super cool. I don't know if we'll see him sustain that kind of viewership after this eventually dies down, or if maybe what'll happen after the hype is gone, but really cool to watch. And I think just a pretty cool case of how you can do non-gaming stuff and really make it on Twitch these days.
Yeah, I mean, we've discussed in a couple of previous episodes, haven't we, about, you know, there will have been Rust streamers before Rust really popped off, and there was certainly people that benefited from other games that blew up last year. We've got an interview here on the podcast where I interviewed the Tarkov streamer Pestily, who absolutely blew up when that game started to gain some traction on Twitch. And this is, I guess, one of the examples of a non-game, but somebody that has been streaming something for a long time, and then that niche gets a lot of exposure in the real world, and you know, a lot of new people start to be interested in it, and then he reaps the rewards because he's been putting the work and putting the effort in. So I think it's really cool that you know, all kinds of people can be streaming on Twitch and have this opportunity for their niche interest to become mainstream, even if it is only for a couple of weeks or a month. Then you can really put the work in and reap the rewards. You know, if you're having 50,000 people watching you every day, I'm sure you're getting a lot of donations and subs and things like that. So I'm glad to see people in all industries being able to benefit from the hype that the mainstream media makes about certain situations and stream their expertise. Really, that's what it is. People want to tune in and hear this guy's opinion because he is probably someone with more expertise than the average Joe that's getting into this this world of stocks. And like you said, who knows how long this will last, but I thought it was a really interesting piece, and we'll see what other niches come up on Twitch that are outside of gaming and who would benefit. But it's hard to predict that kind of thing, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, because we couldn't really have known. I guess if you were following Reddit for a while, you might have seen this coming. But for me, I know I was totally just kind of blindsided by this sudden interest in stock markets. So again, you can't look a year from now and say, okay, next year it looks like Among Us will be huge, so I better start playing that a year from now. Like, no one can know that. So I think the reason it worked so well is because he knows so much about stocks. He's genuinely a very knowledgeable guy, very good at explaining how it all works. Got a really good mission around like why he does it and trying to educate viewers on how to smartly invest and things like that. So again, it's not one of those things you can kind of just set up for what's going to be trending on Twitch to capitalize, more of just having genuine passion and knowledge about a game. So that when it comes along, you're kind of the best person to talk about that thing. And even I saw some other streamers try and talk about the stock situation and explain it to viewers, and either they just weren't quite as knowledgeable or there was some uncertainty, versus this guy's been in it so long that he kind of became the expert on Twitch in this area. So
yeah, I think it has to be natural, right? It has to be something that you're naturally interested in. You can't force, like I couldn't all of a sudden start streaming about stocks when, you know, I know as much as anybody else that's been following it for probably only the last couple of weeks. Like, it has to be something that you're interested in, because people can see through it if it's fake. So, and they can see through it if you're just giving general advice and not being able to answer the more technical questions. So yeah, I don't really think there's much advice for the general person listening to, you know, what to stream, what the next big game or next big niche is going to be. But I guess if you have a niche passion that is part of your stream, you know, aesthetic or part of what you bring to your community, then there's a good chance you should go all in on that, because if it doesn't blow up, then you could be the one that benefits the most from it. But yeah, we've seen some news from Twitch and some news from YouTube this week. I reckon we should start with YouTube, because I think that's the bigger and more exciting news, is that finally clips are coming to YouTube. So exactly the same as Twitch, the ability for you or somebody in your stream, or I think even somebody watching a VOD after the fact, can create a clip, a shortened version of your stream, I think up to 60 seconds or something, and then get a unique URL for that and share that on social medias. But what I found the most interesting about this is that the actual page that you visit when you visit a clipped URL is the full VOD stream, but sort of highlighting the exact clipped moment. But it's very, very simple then to continue watching the stream or to go back in time. You don't have to then, you know, click another button to go to a different page. You're on the page of the full stream VOD, so you can easily subscribe to that channel or add a comment or anything like that, and you can easily watch the rest of the stream if you want to keep going, which I think is a much better implementation than Twitch has done. I have got some other thoughts, but I'll send it over to you to hear what you thought on first viewing.
Yeah, I mean, finally, this is one of the things, probably the top requests that we've had for YouTube gaming and live streaming that we're finally getting, which is super exciting. And it did show a little preview of how it's going to work. So like you said, it looks like it's going to be right on the content page. And it even seemed like you could kind of see the chat for the stream below there grayed out. So we'll still get that kind of chat experience with the clip, which is what Twitch does. And I agree, it's probably going to help a lot of people drive into the actual full broadcast so that it feels like it's part of the bigger one and not just its own standalone clip that you might want to go see the rest of it for. I am curious to see if they kind of make it to the point where you would want to watch multiple clips, because I think Twitch kind of does that well, where it'll show you other top clips and then still kind of clip through. Although you probably don't end up ever going to an actual broadcast, you just watch clips. So maybe that's where YouTube has the edge, is driving to the full broadcast. So far it looks pretty good. I think I am excited to see it roll out for everybody. I know for gaming in particular, it's going to be huge, because this is easily one of the top requests we've had for gaming content creators. So hopefully that means we'll see a couple others coming later this year, potentially. We'll have to see.
Yeah, I think that's a good point that you mentioned. Like, they didn't really show off a way to be able to browse clips. And I don't even think Twitch does a good job of this. Like, surely there is a way of doing it on the Twitch app where you can flick through, like you can flick through Instagram top clips. Like, why have they not done that yet? That would be able to introduce new streamers to people. It would help with discovery. It would keep people on the Twitch app for longer. Like, it just seems like an absolute no-brainer, and maybe YouTube is thinking along those same lines, but it depends what their real push is. If they're trying to get people to then, you know, watch a full live stream, then it makes sense the kind of page that they're being sent to right now. But I think there's room for improvement, but I was really, really impressed with, like, straight away how seamless it seemed, the actual experience of clipping, because the sort of sneak peek that they released, I think Fwiz, who is like the gaming YouTube gaming director on Twitter. He tweeted about this and linked a VOD where you could go and test out the clipping functionality. So I had to play with it. And the actual ability to be able to like scrub along the full video as to where you want to clip 20 seconds or 40 seconds was so much better than the Twitch experience where you kind of have to press like the clip button and then you get a timeline of like the last minute and then you have to choose like 20 seconds to a minute from that. And if you wanted to edge back ever so slowly, like you have to go then go to the VOD, scroll to the right point. Like it's a horrible experience, whereas it was so smooth and like the playback was so smooth on YouTube. So we'll see if that scales, because right now there's only a handful of channels that have clips created. But yeah, if they release it, they usually release features like this to like partners with 100,000 subscribers and then partners with 10,000, they slowly release it that way. So it kind of goes from the top down, which is, I imagine what they'll do with this, but they're pretty good at rolling this out to like all users eventually, certainly all partners, so anybody above 1,000 subscribers eventually. And I think it's just another one of those features that is going to be really useful as YouTube tries to grow its live streaming space. But I guess the other thing is, like, it seemed like you would be able to clip VODs as well. So are you going to be able to clip like a YouTube video? And, you know, if I'm releasing a 15-minute video about how to fix, I don't know, your lighting, and you have a friend that has a really specific a question and you find the answer in my video, can you then send, you know, a 20-second clip from my VOD to them? Like, I presume you would be able to, and that's kind of a cool bit extra benefit of something that you can't really do on Twitch.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting, because we've never really had that clipping experience on videos before, just for live streams. So that would be really interesting if you just need that little snippet of a video and you don't need the rest of the 10 minutes and you can share that places. That could be pretty cool. Or maybe it's used badly and things are taken out of context, but still, it could be cool to try around with. When you tried it out on the test clipper tool, could you scrub through the clip after you'd created it? Because I didn't see that in the preview. Like, were you able to move forward and backward as you were looking at the clip you'd created?
Yeah. The actual scrubbing seemed really seamless to me. And like, when you send that clip to somebody, they can then, like I said, they can see this. The clip is sort of highlighted, but they can then expand out of that if they want to watch any more of the VOD. One thing I didn't test, which I'm now thinking would have been a good thing to test, is if you paste the URL into like social media, what the preview would then show. Like, would it just be like a time-stamped highlight where they could then continue to watch the rest of the VOD, or is it just like a looping 20 seconds, 40 seconds, whatever you set it to? So there's plenty more testing to do. I'm probably going to make a video in the coming months about YouTube live streaming, and like this is a big step forward. And like we've said a couple of times, I think really like the chat experience for both the streamer and the viewer is one of the things that Twitch really has a big hold over YouTube on right now. But clips was a big thing that a lot of people wanted, and they haven't just half-hearted a crappy implementation. They've really done some things that Twitch wasn't even doing. And I think maybe the clipping experience on YouTube is even better than Twitch now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think this is huge. And like you said, that along with the actual experience of being in the stream and interacting with chat and emotes and things like that are kind of the last pieces. And it's all just design stuff for the most part. It's not, you know, they've pretty much got the viewer base figured out with YouTube at this point and the rest of that. So if they can get the actual experience piece figured out, then I think it'll be huge. And we actually kind of saw that looking at the quarterly report for Streamlabs, which finally came out. You want to talk about that for a little bit? I think looking at the, you know, we talked to a couple reports already, so it's not that different from what we've already talked about, but this one does cover Facebook and YouTube more, I think, than probably the Stream Elements one did, so it's good for comparison. So no surprise, everything is up across the board in 2020, and the Streamlabs report really shows a dramatic spike from Q1 for Q2 last year, so around the March timeframe, which makes sense with the timeline of COVID and everything. That's when everyone kind of got on. But what was interesting is, again, that wasn't the peak of the year. We actually saw the peak later in towards Q4 of last year, around December. So we talked about this last week, I think, but just good to see that the viewership trend is still going up across the board. It didn't kind of peak out and we're on the decline since COVID hit, which is really good. I think some of the things that I found interesting from here, though, are that one thing is that the total hours watched on all streaming platforms, Twitch has about 65% of total hours watched, but then total hours streamed, Twitch has 90%. So most streamers are still on Twitch, it seems like, by a large margin, whereas people watching streams are less so on Twitch, more on YouTube and Facebook relatively for those numbers. So I thought that was interesting. it might mean that there's more potential for YouTube and Facebook that people on Twitch just don't know about. So maybe we'll see people break out into YouTube and Facebook and try those more in the coming year, I think.
I mean, I'd be interested to hear why you think that is. Why do more people stream to Twitch even when the viewership would probably benefit you starting on a different platform?
I think Twitch is still sort of like the perennial streaming platform at this point. It's when you think of live streaming, you still think of Twitch to the most extent, or that's the one that gets marketed the most. Because YouTube and Facebook still have the problem of live streaming is not all they do. They do, you know, YouTube is still at the end of the day known for making videos, and Facebook is probably known for sharing things on your post and wall and that kind of thing. Whereas Twitch is pretty much just live streaming. So they've had that benefit where when you think of live streaming, it's usually Twitch. But again, if you're looking at stuff that's watched, it's really expanding into YouTube and Facebook now. So I think also probably a lot of, like even for myself, just Twitch had a lot of nostalgia to it and you're on that for a long time. So it's tough to move platforms probably for a lot of people. Or just the idea of Twitch streaming is very attractive and sort of that was the classic way to do Twitch streaming and it's changing now. So people still haven't made that transition yet. That's what I'd say. Do you feel differently?
Yeah, no, I agree. And I wonder how clouded our opinions are because we've been around since like the very beginning on Twitch. So we know Twitch is the live streaming platform and YouTube is the VOD platform and Facebook is the platform where you know, your mum posts. There'll be new streamers now that discover streaming from YouTube. They'll be watching Courage on YouTube and then they hear about Twitch and maybe they get introduced to Twitch as a platform that way. Like it's definitely a benefit that YouTube is known for VODs and is introducing streaming because Twitch in no way is introducing VODs to their platform. So they're really doubling down on just being a live streaming platform. So yeah, it's really interesting. I think that's always been the way though, that your average concurrent viewers is higher on YouTube. So it makes more sense to try and grow an audience there. But there is definitely an argument to like not keeping all your eggs in one basket. Like if you live streamed and created VOD content to the same channel in YouTube and for some reason, you know, DMCA or something on an old video, you get your account striked and then eventually banned, then you've lost everything. Whereas how most of the big streamers as we know them have a popular Twitch stream and then they have YouTube content on top of that and they kind of work them hand in hand. So yeah, one thing I will say is this report, which is the Streamlabs and Stream Hatchet report, was way more detailed than the Stream Elements one. Like, this was kind of more what I was expecting to read through last week or whenever we did the Stream Elements one. Like, there was a lot more coverage of YouTube gaming, which I think we mentioned there wasn't really too much on the Stream Elements report. So yeah, we'll definitely leave this linked in the show notes for the data nerds amongst you listeners and watchers. Get really deep into the data here where you can see, you know, what an impact COVID had and what a year 2020 was for streaming. But we should probably stop covering 2020 because we're now in February of 2021. One other bit of news, when I said that YouTube and Twitch had news, Twitch had a little bit of good and bad news. Let's start with the good this week. They've made emotes and the whole managing of emotes, uploading and rearranging and removing emotes way easier. And I think this has been a problem on Twitch for ages where how you manage your Twitch channel is like six different places. Like you have a dashboard, you have a creator board, you have like emotes for bits, you have emotes for subscribers. And you know, it was an absolute mess. And it seems like there has been some effort from the engineering teams behind that to make it easier to manage. So one of the things that they've done about that is made a new one page for all of your emote management, uploading, removing, rearranging, renaming, changing your, what do they call the prefix? Is that the name of it? Yeah. I've checked this out because I didn't really understand why you'd want to rearrange your emotes, and I've now worked that out. What did you think of this? Did you have a little play around? Have you changed any of your emotes since the new update?
So I didn't have a chance to actually get into the tool, but I read through kind of the changes that they made. I think anything they can do to make the process easier is great in terms of making it easy to swap emotes around and not have to fully delete emotes off and then re-upload them and then sometimes wait for an approval period to get the same emote back up that you just had on the site. So good to see that they're kind of making that process easier. And like you said, Twitch has had a problem of making everything in 10 different places on the site before. So I'm glad they're condensing it all into one area. Hopefully that'll make stuff easier. I also saw they said they were adding an emote library soon. So I think this is where you'd have an approved list of emotes that you could kind of take off or on the channel as you wanted to, which would be super nice if you're someone who likes to just constantly kind of alternate your emotes for holidays or for different things happening throughout the year. I know like the Santa emotes always come out during Christmas, so that could be pretty cool. And I think, again, the more you can do that for creators, the more excitement they'll be around just constantly changing the emotes and not making it such a hassle to do that. I personally, I don't rotate my emotes that often, so I don't think this is a huge effect for me, but I still think for people who do that and want to have the option, it's super nice to make it easier, and maybe I would start doing that if it was really easy to do.
Yeah, I think it's just like remembering back what it used to be like to upload an emote, and you had to have like three different resolutions, and you had to you couldn't drag and drop, you had to like find them on your desktop and have one at 116 pixels. It was just like, it was so convoluted. For some, they're trying to make like Twitch easier for average Joe to go and stream on, and like it was so difficult. I could probably have done a video on how to upload emotes. It was like that confusing. But now it's super simple. Like drag one emote size in, it resizes it for all the different resolutions, and makes naming them all really easy. And I found out, I think the only reason that they're bragging about rearranging emotes, because I didn't even know why you would ever want to rearrange the order of your emotes, is just how they show up when somebody considers subscribing. They like show, you know, the emotes that you unlock by subscribing, and it's just the order that they get shown in. So not a huge feature, and unless there's something that I'm missing. I was like diving in like, why do people want to rearrange the emote order? But apparently that is something people want to do, and that is the reason why. But the negative news about Twitch, there was a little bit this week, and the main bit I saw was the embed experience, because for those that don't know, embedding a Twitch stream, exactly like embedding a YouTube video or embedding any kind of content anywhere on the World Wide Web, is just where you can feature content on a different website. So a good example would be if you go to gamingcareers.com/podcast, we have all of our podcast episodes, and you can listen to them right on my website because we embed a podcast player onto the website. So it's not actually storing the file on our website, it's embedding it from somewhere else. I could also put a YouTube video on a page on my website and it would be embedded, and it would look exactly like the normal YouTube player, and you'd have all the normal controls, but the actual video is hosted on YouTube, not hosted on my website. So a few websites have been made and been very successful for Twitch streams where they embed the Twitch experience but on a different website. You know, the ones that I've actually used, I would say, are like the multi-Twitch. There's a few different ones where you can watch like multiple Twitch streams together, and you can like choose which chat window you want to watch. And it was basically before you had like the party experience. I can't remember what Twitch call it, but there's certainly others like Juked, Team Liquid, HLTV for Counter-Strike. They all have like big audiences that watch Twitch content embedded on a different website. And Twitch are kind of ruining that embed experience, surprisingly. So there was a couple of tweets, one from Fishsticks, who used to, I think, work at Twitch. And then obviously Slasher covered it. I'll read out Slasher's tweet because it kind of sums it up quite nicely. Twitch has added a purple screen of death and pop-ups to embed streams, not to combat viewership inflation or fake views, but purely for greed. And in turn, all Twitch has done is hurt legitimate platforms and communities such as Juked, Team Liquid, and HLTV. So this purple screen of death is kind of like a page that you see, I think, instead of an advert, or it just comes up randomly in a stream that basically says, hey, looks like you're not watching on the Twitch platform. It's much better if you watch on the Twitch platform. So click this image and we'll take you to the stream. And, you know, that's just a little bit scummy, especially as these other websites have probably helped Twitch's growth rather than hindered it. So yeah, it's an interesting point. I don't know why they're doing it, why they want more people on the platform. It's probably to help with ad experiences and things like that, but not completely sure why. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, this was unfortunate to see. I've actually used a lot of sites for work and also just for personal stuff that involve embedding the Twitch platform for just watching streamers that are part of a program, or even like guide sites for like Mobifier was a good example of having tons of embeds. So it's unfortunate to see. I think it was probably caused by a couple different things. First of all, I think it's a pretty short-term view, because this probably will result in more people coming to actual Twitch in the short term, but I think it's probably hurting a lot of the partnerships that Twitch has and the overall willingness of people to embed Twitch streams on their sites versus just switching to YouTube or something now with how good YouTube's getting. So that's not great to see. I think probably also because of like advertiser revenue. I know that you know, there were some cases in the past where people would embed their Twitch streams into guide content or something, and suddenly on Twitch they'd have thousands of viewers, but no one was ever talking in the chat because it was just thousands of people watching on a different site. And I think that probably didn't look very good for advertisers when they saw these big numbers, but then zero engagement on the actual content happening. So I think that's probably a reason they're doing it. But the problem is that that's not all the cases of embed happening. There's a lot of good uses of embeds. I think Fishsticks was talking about how originally Twitch was featured on, like, way back on StarCraft content, and that was kind of how StarCraft actually helped grow Twitch, was through embeds. And now they've kind of, like, turned their back on the thing that helped them grow in the first place, which is not a great idea, in my opinion. But I don't know. It's unfortunate, and it's the same exact experience, by the way. If you saw the purple screen, if you have an ad block or something on, that same purple screen is what's appearing on these embed players now and redirecting you back to Twitch. Again, I think the whole point is just to get you back on Twitch so they can grow their, you know, total users on the platform and watch hours on platform, people on platform. But I think in the long run, it might end up hurting them because people that want to work with them and feature Twitch new audiences are not going to do that anymore if they can't actually get a good experience. So I was pretty upset to see this personally.
Yeah, I mean, I'm the same, really. I think there's one of the major complaints about Twitch from smaller streamers that I see all the time in like the Gaming Careers Discord and in YouTube comments is discoverability is really poor. And I completely agree. Like, the discoverability on Twitch is really poor, and it's a major issue and something that I know that they're working on, and they're trying to implement new ways to, like, feature creators. But there are websites that have been built using Twitch embeds to try and help discoverability, you know, like rotating streamers that you might like and trying to use, you know, some AI algorithms to help promote smaller streamers to people that want to watch, you know, a smaller streamer. And this ruins it. So it's not only bad for people that are bigger streamers that are embedding, you know, like you said, in guides and things like that, but it's also bad for common folk that rely on websites to help with discoverability. So it's just a really strange decision. I think it probably actually comes down to ads. I wonder if they're struggling to get ads across in embeds for some reason, like if there's some difference in how the ad experience shows, and a lot of people may be using embeds to get away from the ad experience, so they've gone and done something even worse so that you have to watch it on Twitch. But it's just intrusive. It's not a great experience for anybody that does like to use embeds. And you know, some criticism, and I think it's all fair criticism to Twitch this week, so we'll follow that situation certainly and see, you know, if anything comes up from that, if they change anything, because I think they have changed the ad experience. We were complaining probably sort of October, November time on the podcast about how many ads were on Twitch, and I feel like they have toned that down a bit. So they definitely do listen to the community. So hopefully this made enough of a stir really to make them change their minds.
Yeah, I don't know if in general they've toned down the ads, but I will say they did announce this week that partners will no longer have ads on their channels, which is kind of cool. So if you're a partnered streamer, you won't see ads on Twitch. To be clear, this is not if you are a partner, viewers will not get ads, because I saw a lot of people confused as to whether that was happening. This is just for actual partners not getting ads. So
yeah.
It's a nice little nod to partners, I think. You know, that's still a huge, a very small minority of Twitch compared to the vast user base, but at least a little perk that partners can have, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, we've talked a few times about me starting up the Gaming Careers live stream and whether I should go to Twitch or YouTube. I am a Twitch partner, and maybe I'd lose that if I started streaming to YouTube. So maybe this is a reason to stay. But yeah, it's a nice to have, I think. It's weird to celebrate like the top 1% getting an extra feature that most people don't get. So maybe that's why I haven't seen as many ads, is because I'm logged into the Gaming Careers account, which is still partnered. But yeah, it's a nice thing that they're doing for partners. I definitely don't see it going down to affiliates, because pretty much anybody can get an affiliate account, I feel like, on Twitch. The requirements are so low for that. But yeah, it's a nice thing for the top. I don't even know what the percentage is, but I think there's 10,000 partners now or so, isn't there? So yeah, a little bit of news there. What else did we have? When we're talking about embedding, actually, one thing that did come up this week was an interesting question. And I think as DMCA evolves, we're going to continue to think about where the policy lies and where privacy concerns lie. And there was an interesting discussion in Kocarnage's Twitter, where somebody was asking whether he would start putting the Twitch chat replay in with his VODs that go up onto YouTube. So you see this quite often in like highlight channels or, you know, channels that are covering certain aspects of live streamers. Like I watch a lot of like the League of Legends stream highlights channels, and they'll quite often put like Twitch chat going mental when there was a really good play in a YouTube VOD, and it'll just be overlaid over the video. And there are now some like privacy concerns around that, because certainly in the EU, with all the laws that we have here now in terms of like making sure that you can keep your data private and it not being stored anywhere. Technically, as a Twitch viewer, if your name is linked to you in any way and it's shown on a VOD, you could appeal that and maybe get the video taken down on YouTube. Like, it's far-fetched, I realize that, but it is an interesting discussion that probably will come to fruition at some point in the next couple of years. So yeah, I don't really know what I would do in that situation, because it is quite fun to have the Twitch chat replay. It kind of adds something to the video that you're watching, doesn't it? You know, especially if you only just put it in when there's a really hype moment or a real fail moment, and you can sort of agree with Twitch chat that this person has had a hilarious moment. But what would you do if you're in Co Carnage's situation?
Oh man, this is really tough, because we've talked about the DMCA apocalypse could kind of branch into other areas too. Like, I think of emotes, for example. How many people are using emotes of stuff they don't own, whether it's like Nintendo characters, whatever else? Someone else was talking about even things like alerts on the stream. Like, if you have your name show up an alert that you paid for, but then it goes on a YouTube video, can that be taken down? So there's this whole world of copyright that we haven't even gotten into yet. I think this one is still kind of in the gray area, it sounds like, from reading through the replies and discussion. It seems like no one fully knows whether you needed to take down the Twitch chat, but like you said, it's super common in a ton of YouTube videos. I think I would say most big streamers that I watch have some sort of Twitch chat replay embedded into the video. So it's very common practice. But Ko's point to people who said that was, well, people are using music for years they didn't own and thought it was fine until it wasn't. So it could happen potentially with Twitch chat. Now, I don't think it's quite as black and white, like I said, for like music that you created and have a copyright for and own versus your name on a public site that isn't even your actual name. That's it's hard to say. I'm not a lawyer, so I don't pretend to know like the ins and outs of this. But we'll have to kind of keep an eye on it, how it goes. I think people probably will not stop putting Twitch chat in their VODs for a while until there is some sort of issue or someone has made an example of, if it goes that far. But just interesting to see more discussions in copyright in general in this space, and we might see more come in the future too, I think.
Yeah, I definitely don't want to scaremonger anyone here, because I think if I was in his situation, I probably would continue to put Twitch chat replays into YouTube vids, and especially people that have, you know, when they're streaming, they have a little section of Twitch chat below their webcam or something like that. You're not even adding it into your YouTube replays, like it's embedded in that video anyway. So it was an interesting point, I think, to discuss, because you know, if it becomes more and more mainstream, as we're predicting streaming to become, all it takes is like some example lawsuit of, you know, a copyright troll or somebody, you know, taking this to court and saying, you know, I was a viewer in this chat and I sent a message with some personal information and now it's all over YouTube and I never gave my consent when I signed up for Twitch for that to be the case. And who knows? That could well be a case in the next couple of years, but I don't want to scare anybody. I just thought it's interesting to think of, as this industry becomes more and more popular, more and more mainstream, you know, the complications that probably come with that. And like you said, so many people using Pokemon characters in emotes and, you know, in little graphics that they have on stream. And I imagine they'd probably come to be not allowed sooner than any of this, like embedding Twitch chat, but just an interesting point nonetheless.
Yeah, especially with Nintendo, I would not be surprised if they start cracking down on your little Charmander emote. Better get that out quick, because they're going to sue you for $1 billion pretty soon the way Nintendo's going. So there was a couple other small things I did want to mention. So I just saw this morning. There was discussion around Twitch shadow banning people who use VPNs now, which is kind of crazy. So this is, if you have a VPN active and you type a chat message in the chat, people will not see it, even though you can see it as the person who's typed it. No one else can actually see it. So if you have a VPN and you've been talking to people and no one's been talking back and you're wondering why no one is interested in you, it's not you. Apparently it's the VPN. And there's some debate as to whether this is like an issue on Twitch's end or if this is deliberate choice, but it seems like it's trending towards a deliberate choice based on some of the discussion that I've seen. So we'll keep an eye on it, but just another potential way that Twitch is kind of blocking certain ways to use the site. And I'm not kind of sure why they're doing it for the VPN. Again, maybe to get around ads, people are doing it, so they're trying to punish that kind of thing. But just interesting. And I know I don't want to harp too much on all the stuff Twitch is doing to cause bad experience, but just something to keep an eye on, I think, over the next couple of weeks here.
It's difficult to know, isn't it? Because we don't know the reasoning behind it, and it may well be for our benefit. You know, we might be complaining about bot accounts and, you know, fake viewers and all these kind of things. Twitch might be legitimately trying to fix that by doing these embed blockers and, you know, blocking VPNs from chatting in chat. And that might just be an outcome based on something that they've tried and they didn't think about, you know, a negative experience for people that actually legitimately do need to use a VPN, you know, to be able to watch a stream for some reason or just for privacy in general. So yeah, it's difficult to know without the context of why Twitch has done it. And it's very easy for us to run away with the narrative of like, oh, Twitch wants everybody on their website. Twitch wants people not to use VPNs so that they can, you know, serve them proper ads. And that may well be the case, but I don't want to paint like Twitch in such a bad color without really knowing the reasons behind it. So we'll, like you said, we'll follow that and see if it gets any better. One thing I did see, like in the Reddit comments to that thread about them banning chat in VPN, was people saying like all those top streamers with like NordVPN sponsorships now, they're probably going to lose them as soon as NordVPN finds out, you know, you can't actually chat on Twitch if you use that. But I thought that was quite a funny comment. I always wish I was like that witty that I could put out a Twitter response to something with like a funny tidbit, but I'll just steal them from Reddit for the meantime. One thing that we did ask last week was for a question from chat every week, which I think is a nice idea, where you can leave a comment in the YouTube video or, you know, message me or Ben on Twitter or on Instagram. I actually got quite a lot of responses on Instagram. I put like a story up. So if you're not following me over on Instagram, it's at gaming. It's actually at gaming.careers, but if you search gaming careers, you'll find it, where I'm going to probably do that every week to get some additional questions. But the question we got this week was on Twitter from Glitchagummy Gaming. I hope I haven't butchered that. Who asks, in response to the recent podcast, what are your feelings on restream.io for figuring out where to land in the streaming ecosystem? And I'll give a brief discussion of what Restream is for people that don't know. Restream is similar to quite a few platforms out, but I think it probably was the first, where it allows you to effectively, you stream to Restream, and then Restream sends your stream out to whichever platforms you want. So you can stream to Twitch at the same time as YouTube, at the same time as Mix. Oh no, wait, that doesn't exist anymore. At the same time as Facebook. And it's, you know, it's deemed as a good place to start streaming, where you don't really have an audience anywhere. You're effectively putting your eggs out in all of the baskets to see if there's an audience on any of these platforms. And then maybe you choose to just solely be on one platform in the future. But a really good question, because it's a different ecosystem in 2021 than it was even a couple of years ago. So what are your thoughts on Restream.io for figuring out where to land in the streaming ecosystem?
Yeah, so first of all, great question. Thanks, Glitch, for submitting this one. So I have not personally used Restream in my experience, but for this particular question, in terms of using it to figure out where to land in the streaming ecosystem, I don't think there's anything wrong with using Restream just to test out streaming, especially if you're brand new to streaming and you haven't tried these platforms before and you just want to try them all at once. I think Restream is fine just to get everything out. And you can even like rewatch your VOD on each platform, see how it looks, and just see like which platform gives you the most organic growth. I think that'd be even just a cool experiment to see what works starting off the bat and where you get the most traction to start with. I'm not a huge fan of, I know some people who use Restream kind of indefinitely and restream it all the time. I'm not a huge fan of that model where you're always restreaming and you never commit to a single platform. A, because you lose some perks if you don't commit to a platform, but B, I think the viewer experience for a Restream is not that great. I know there are bots that will merge chats between Twitch and YouTube and Facebook and things like that, but I don't think those are the best either, in my opinion. So I don't think it's a way you want to grow your stream in the long run. But if you're starting out and just want to try stuff out, I think it's a great way to dip your feet in and just experience everything at the same time, essentially.
Yeah, I think I agree with you, which is kind of obvious when you're starting out that you don't know where to start. Maybe a couple of years ago, Twitch was so far ahead of any other live streaming platform that so many people started out on Twitch. Whereas now it's more of a legitimate question, isn't it? And I can see why Glitch asked, because, you know, if I was starting today, I don't know if I would start on Twitch. I probably would use a service like Restream to try and find, you know, if there's any kind of loyal viewership on any platforms. One thing I will say is it's super tempting, even if you're using a platform like Restream, when you get the email through about Twitch affiliate that you've met the requirements and they want to sign you on a contract, to sign it. And I probably wouldn't advise that anymore. Because what they're effectively doing is they're stopping you from being able to use something like Restream, where you're streaming to multiple platforms at the same time. Because your contract basically says that when you're streaming content to Twitch, it has to be just on Twitch and nowhere else for at least 24 hours. So I probably wouldn't rush to sign that as soon as you've hit the like 3 viewer minimum or whatever. And I probably would use a service like Restream to see, you know, if there was audience in a place that I didn't really expect it. You know, we both said that we haven't really ever experimented with Facebook, and that's the perfect way to be able to experiment, because you're not just solely streaming to Facebook and wasting your time everywhere else. You kind of get that opportunity to stream to multiple at the same time. But I do completely agree with you that from a viewer's point of view, if they realize that you're using a service like Restream, it doesn't feel as special to them, I don't think, you know, when they're one of the first viewers on your YouTube stream or something like that. So I would try and find a platform, but like certainly for starting out, I think it's the way I would probably go. And I know that there's a lot of people saying that, you know, you're not dedicating yourself to one platform, but you certainly do want to eventually land on a platform, like you said. You don't want to keep continuously streaming to like three different places at the same time. Eventually you do want to sign a contract and hopefully be able to get, you know, subscribers and donations and things like that. But I think for starting out, I probably would use a service like that.
Yeah. And one of the benefits, I think, when you are brand new, if you're someone who has a full-time job or you're just very busy in general, you might not have the time to commit a stream to each individual platform throughout the week and make that consistent versus just hitting them all at the same time with Restream. So I think that's another great way you can kind of be efficient with your time just to start out. And then once you find, okay, Facebook is working really well after my initial test here, I think I'll commit to that. Or whichever way you want to go, at least you'll be able to hit everything at once and then kind of choose and go into that one thing instead of kind of rotating between Twitch one day and then YouTube the next and Facebook the next. And so I think that saves a lot of time in the beginning too. So yeah, I think I'm all for it if you're trying out stuff and just want to test out the beginning of your stream.
Yeah, totally agree. Really good point. You know, schedules are hard to keep to when you've got a full-time job and everything else in the world at the moment. So it helps split up that time by streaming to them all at the same time. So yeah, thanks so much for the question. We'll definitely keep that going because I like it. I like having, you know, a question from somebody that's listening to this podcast. So definitely hit up either me or Ben. We'll both be looking through responses on Twitter, Instagram, and on the YouTube videos. So write your questions down below and we'll consider them for the following weeks. But I think that probably wraps it up. We did have a few other bits, but I feel like we've kind of hit that timer that we usually try and hit and covered all the major news. So yeah, thanks so much for watching and for listening. Let us know your questions for next week and we'll catch you in the next video. Peace.
See you guys.